How's it going, mate? Whereabouts are you these days?
Well, I live in Sheffield. I've lived in Sheffield for years.
Oh, okay.
I've been based here for a long time. Got my first job here, and I've ended up staying. My wife's from Sheffield, and you know, my brother used to live here as well. So,
right.
I still get back to Hull quite a lot. Not go to as many matches as I'd like, but still go back and see family and what have you. How about you? Where are you based?
I'm based in just outside Manchester now, in Sale.
Oh, right, yeah.
But same as you, try and get back when I can.
Yeah. Your dad's no longer with us, is he?
No, he passed away about 15 years ago now. It's been a while now.
Sorry about that.
Nah, it's all right. But yeah, like, going back to Hull then, like, whereabouts did he grow up and stuff?
I grew up in Anlaby, mainly. My old man was a dentist on Springbank.
Right.
And we used to live above the shop when I was very little. Then we moved out to the suburbs. Mainly Anlaby, Tramby Lane, and then Windsor Avenue. And I've not really lived there since I went away to university. But my brother's still there. He lives on Car Lane at Willoughby. And got various nieces and nephews dotted around with the relatives. So still home, really, even though I've been left for like nearly 40 years.
Right, it's
kind of that connection will always be there, really.
And what's like your first memories of Boothby Park? Were you always mad into football, kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I started going. I mean, I'm dare I say it, I'm nearly 60. So I've been going since I was probably about 5, 67. Right. I can't actually remember my first game, but I've seen a lot of very bad football for a long time. Long suffering. Yeah. How about you?
About 93 my first game, yeah. It started off all right and then quickly got quite bad.
Yeah. I think you've had your fair share of decent stuff, haven't you?
Post new stadium, it's been unbelievable.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was a turning point, wasn't it, really?
Yeah. So what era was it when you first started going then?
The Waggy Chillo.
Ah, okay, right.
Kind of era, Ian Butler, all of those. 16. I guess it would be about 67. I can't remember many games in the 60s, to be honest. I certainly lived through that era. I remember games from like the 70, maybe 1970, when I'd been about 7. I've got plenty to talk about.
Excellent, yeah. So whereabouts? I'm always fascinated how different it was back then. Like, whereabouts in the ground would you go on a match day?
I mean, in the very early days, and I don't remember these, my two brothers and my dad would go on the south stand.
Right.
And as I say, I can't really remember too many games from that kind of era. And then really, we were dotted around. All we were on Bunkers Hill for a bit, sometimes the Well, sometimes the old north stand before it got pulled down. We mainly stood, I was going to say sat in most parts of the ground. We very rarely sat, to be honest. I think the only time we sat was when Man United came to town in the 1970s when they dropped down to the second division. They had a terrible reputation for football hooliganism and so on. And they didn't disappoint that day. There was fighting all over the ground, I remember. We were safely in the north stand, me and the dad, that day. And we won. I think it was 2-0 or 2-1. Waggy got a couple of goals. And it was a fantastic occasion. I mean, it was about, I think the capacity crowd, it was probably about 30-odd thousand back then. I'd have to look in the record books to remember precisely, probably low 30s. But it was full that day. Fantastic to have Man United come to town. I think Stuart Pearson was playing for them, who was ex-Hull City, maybe even Jeff Whelans as well, both ex-City players. And to see Man United was a big deal. I'd seen them actually play City in the Watney Cup in 1971, when Bobby Charlton scored the winning goal, I think. It was the first ever penalty shootout. I actually mentioned this to Bobby Charlton in later life. He remembers the game still because it was a penalty shootout, the first one ever. It was a midweek game under the floodlights, fantastic. So, certainly those two games against Manchester United stick in my mind, especially because we beat them in the league match.
Yeah, I always remember my dad talking about that, the penalty shootout, because apparently Ian McKechnie, the keeper, took a pen, and then When he missed, he started laughing, apparently.
Did he? He was quite a useful outfield player in McKechnie. I think I saw a testimonial match when he played on the wing, which is rare for a goalkeeper. Oh, right. I mean, they talk about people like Edison at Manchester City doing Ian McKechnie did it years ago.
Yeah, we've got a bit of form for it. I think, obviously, Alan Fettis, and then I talked to Steve Wilson, and apparently he played on the wing in like an auto windscreens game once or something.
Yeah. Oh, right. I didn't know that. Yeah.
But yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned kind of the atmosphere in the 70s and like, you know, having a bit of a reputation with the crowds. And I've been reading Richard Lusmore's book recently about, you know, it was a risk going to games.
Scary. It kind of depended who was coming to town, really. Certain teams brought big followings and certain teams brought violent followings, quite frankly. And it was the obvious, you know, usual suspects, I guess, the likes of Millwall and people like that who had a terrible reputation and still have a reputation to this day. So, yeah, it tended to be local derbies when there was a big sort of away following. So if we played the likes of Bradford City or Leeds or the two Sheffield clubs, they could get a bit tasty and a bit scary. And for a young kid, as I was back then, it was. But I mean, you kind of went to the match and you half just sort of took it for granted that it was going to be partly exciting, partly entertaining, but also partly scary. That was part of the deal. You know, you kind of accepted it. But you were still a bit frightened, but you still went along week after week. So it's kind of a strange setup back in those days. I remember I actually saw my first ever first division game. You know, what was the first division is now the Premier League at Newcastle, because we had relatives in Newcastle. So I tagged along to Newcastle against Leeds. I think it was Newcastle against Blackpool in the early 70s, and that was a different kettle of fish completely. Far bigger ground, far bigger crowd. And I remember being lifted off my feet at St. James's Park in the Gallagher end and thinking, this is just so exciting. I mean, it was so dangerous as well. But for a young kid, it was just absolutely, you know, it was a sort of white knuckle ride, but it was also really thrilling. It was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's a bit of like a nostalgia for that kind of period of football. In terms of, you know, like normal blokes playing the game kind of thing and more relatable. Is that something you see as well?
Yeah, I mean, the game has changed out of all recognition from the time I first watched it and probably from the time you first started going. It's constantly evolving, I suppose. But I mean, back in the day, it was really quite primitive, wasn't it? There was no, there's very little segregation. The police kind of, the methods of controlling the crowd were pretty primitive. There was no sort of sense that you are customers and there to be protected. It was, you know, if anyone stepped out of line, you'd be dealt with pretty, you know, pretty harshly. And the conditions in the ground were terrible. The stands were kind of crumbling. The terraces were dangerous. It was, you know, you look back and you think, God, how did we put up with that? Why did we put up with that? But we did. That was football back in the day. And you went along with it. I mean, some people say that it's too sanitized now and that, you know, everyone's sitting down and that changes the atmosphere. I know that they're bringing back safe standing in a few grounds. They're certainly trialing that in the Premier League at the moment. But I think you could argue it is a bit more sanitized now. It's very safe. It's a family environment. Some people say it's been kind of, you know, what's the word? Kind of not yuppified, but, you know, it's more bourgeois, if you like. It's more middle class and respectable. And we miss that kind of running the gauntlet and that dangerous sort of menacing air that the old games used to have. I mean, I'm caught in the middle. I mean, clearly safety had to improve. Clearly they have to market the game to a new audience, and that means providing the facilities that suit. But, you know, on my nostalgic days, I look back to some of the dangerous times of the 60s and 70s and think, yeah, it was at the time, it was quite good fun.
And then what about in terms of your own career then? Like, what point did you know you wanted to get into the media type of thing?
Well, I always had a hankering after it. I was at school, I went to Morris College, which is no longer there now. It's amalgamated with St. Mary's Catholic School. And my first love was always sport, but closely followed by music. So used to always go and see bands and stuff, City Hall, and sort of as I got older, I was able to go into sort of clubs and things, the Welly Club and places like that. And I started writing about music for sort of school magazine. So I always had a kind of hankering after music, after writing, and a hankering too after, I guess, a career in journalism. It seemed a sort of long range kind of target. I never really imagined that I could follow this through. But I had an interest from quite an early age. And I used to read all the music papers as well as all the sports pages of the newspapers. So you could see that something was kind of taking shape there. And it was only after university when I thought, you know, what am I going to do with my life? That I really sort of looked around and saw that there was a possibility of pursuing a career in this direction. And there were postgraduate courses that I could do, and they would lead to perhaps a career in the media. And so it turned out.
Okay. Was it always sport that you're involved in, or did you have to like find your feet elsewhere first, kind of thing?
No, I was a news reporter to start with. I worked in local radio in Sheffield, at Radio Hallam, reporting the news, reporting the Hillsborough disaster, court cases, crime, the whole gamut of the kind of things that you hear reported on local radio and regional television, really. Some of it quite serious stuff, some of it quite sort of lighthearted. And I always kind of filled in for the guy who did the sport, because I'd always had an interest, and I started following there were six teams in our patch, Radio Hallam, still are, Wednesday United, Barnsley, Chesterfield, Doncaster and Rotherham. Started reporting on the odd game there. I think my first ever game I reported on was Doncaster Rovers against Grimsby. And Brian Dean was playing for Doncaster Rovers.
All right.
Nice. And there was an old guy in central defence for Grimsby, Mick Lyons, who played for Everton. He'd been on the fringes, or maybe even played for England. I can't remember, but he was obviously in his pensionable years then. I was rubbish. I remember I reported the game. I was useless. I didn't do the right kind of preparation. I didn't have any stats or figures to hand. I didn't know much about the two teams, but I sort of bumbled my way through, started doing it a bit more regularly, sort of side by side with covering the news as well. And I only really got into sport full time when I joined Look North in 1989. Again, I've gone as a news reporter and producer, and that was my main thing. But I dipped in and out of the sport. When you know, the late Harry Gracian, who just died very sadly the other day, he moved on from Look North in the 90s, and they were looking for someone to take on the sport. So I sort of put my hand up, and that's the way it's gone ever since, really.
Okay. So did that allow you to watch a bit more of City at that point then, doing Look North?
No. I mean, since I was a kid, I've only been able to dip in and out of watching City. I mean, I guess I only really started watching them on a regular basis when I was working as a freelancer. I got back into Look North, having moved on to work for BBC Sport and a few other people. I moved there, and that was my main kind of source of income as a freelance. And I was offered the chance to come back to the BBC in Hull on a freelance basis, just one day a week to cover the sport, really, just to reflect on the weekend's, you know, activities, Grimsby Town, Lincoln, Scunny and Hull City and the Rugby League and so on. And it just coincided with City getting in the Premier League, which was
nice.
Wasn't the plan. It came completely out of the blue back in, what year was it now? 2000 and when did they get promoted?
Oh, first time, 2008.
2008, yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
2008. So I started working at Look North that season, 2007, 2008. And they had just had this fantastic run. And because I was in Hull more often, I don't live there anymore. Because I was in Hull more often, I got the chance to go to games, partly through work, partly through, you know, just being a fan. And, you know, lo and behold, they got promoted to the Premier League. No one could have predicted that. It was an amazing season, and still the most amazing day in my sort of football watching career was Wembley 2008, Dean Windass's goal and all that. So it was a completely a stroke of luck that I'd been, you know, moved to work there at that time. And we had a couple of great seasons, you know, beating some big name opponents, you know, likes of Arsenal and Tottenham, you'll remember. And it was a real roller coaster ride, survived on the last day and lived to fight another day. And then got relegated, I think it was the season after, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was just, yeah, it was just, I consider myself very fortunate, really, to have been around at that time. And it's, yeah, it still remains the highlight of my City supporting days, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned, like, the likes of Bobby Charlton. And obviously, you know, I remember you from doing pieces for Football Focus and different bits. Like, you must have had the chance to meet some pretty amazing people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there was a period of time when I was... I had to pinch myself, really, the way things were going, because I'd just frequently get a phone call. I'd be maybe sat eating tea or something on a, say, a Tuesday evening, and I get a phone call saying, is there any chance you can go to Milan tomorrow? We've got an interview with whoever, Paolo Maldini, say. And I'd say, well, if you can get me a hotel at Heathrow, because the flight's from Heathrow, I'll head off after I've eaten my tea. And literally, I'd be on the motorway, stay in a hotel, and then first thing in the morning, 7:30, there'd be a flight to Milan, and we'd go and interview, you know, some big-name player. This happened for several years. And I look back, and I just think it's just extraordinary. I mean, my daughter tells the story that she came home once when she was at school, and she said to my wife, said, where's Dad? Is in his office. And she said, no, he's in Ukraine. That's how it was. It was just flying here, there, and everywhere. And as you say, yeah, interviewing all of the main players of the day, Zidane, Cristiano Ronaldo, Jim Beckham, you know, everybody. It was, I wouldn't claim to know these people. They're not my friends or anything, but I've certainly interviewed quite a few of them. And it's, you know, as I say, still sort of pinch myself that it actually happened.
Yeah, yeah. Are there any that stand out as particularly memorable or that went particularly badly or anything?
Plenty went badly. I always tell the story that my favourite ever trip wasn't to interview an individual particularly. I went to St. Pauli, which is the second team in Hamburg. And they were playing Hamburg in a local derby, having just got back into the Bundesliga top flight. And they're an extraordinary club, St. Pauli. They're like almost like a cult. And the people who support them are not your regular football fans. They're kind of anarchists and punk rockers and, you know, quite right on, very politically sort of switched on. You know, there's no, they're anti-racist, they're anti-homophobia, they're anti-sexist, all this kind of thing. So they're quite a kind of cool, right on crowd. And yet they're really intense and quite intimidating as well. And a game day at San Paoli is just like no game I've ever been to. It's half the ground has been developed and is quite corporate. And the other half is like from the 1940s or 50s. And all the hardcore stand on the terraces in the old bit. And the atmosphere is extraordinary. They come out to the strains of AC/DC. The manager's not dressed in a blazer suit and tie or whatever. He was dressed in double denim. And I mean, the fans are really hardcore. They don't want to be filmed, but, you know, they don't trust the media. So, you know, if you try to film them, as we did, because we were there to make a film for Football Focus, they were getting quite aggressive and, you know, swearing in German. I didn't just enough German to realize they were telling me to go away, not in a very polite manner. But yeah, I mean, the film we did was one of my favourites, actually. And Ruud van Nistelrooy at the time was playing for Hamburg. We interviewed him afterwards about what it meant to be playing in this derby again. One or two other players who played in the Premier League dotted through both teams. So that was a great trip. But in terms of, you know, special interviews, I remember interviewing Zinedine Zidane at Adidas headquarters somewhere in Germany. And that was another sort of quick overnight, you know, get yourself to... I forget where the headquarters of Adidas is. It's Stuttgart or somewhere. And we went and interviewed Zidane, which was just kind of extraordinary. I mean, what a fantastic player he was. Probably the best player I've seen live. I don't think I've seen Messi play. I've seen Ronaldo play, I guess. But I've seen Messi play at the World Cup, yeah. But Zidane was just extraordinary. I'm just like a ballet dancer, really. But hard as nails as well with it. And he was, you know, didn't speak English. I've got a bit of French, but we.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Yeah, we had a chat. And we had, fortunately, it was a translator, and that was a memorable one. I remember interviewing Ronaldo when Man United were about to be in a cup final, and the producer had been out to see his mother in Madeira, and recorded a message to play back to Ronaldo. We all think Ronaldo is sort of brash and cocky, and which obviously he is. That's part of his makeup as a player. But he's also a sort of quite a modest, humble, family sort of loving man as well. And we played this recording of his mother giving him a good luck message before Wembley. I think it was Wembley. I think it was actually a cup final in Cardiff, but before the cup final anyway. And as you know, she was saying in Portuguese, "Cristiano, we love you, we're proud of you," and all this kind of thing. And Ronaldo was in tears. And I thought, well, this is another side of Ronaldo that we don't necessarily see, the kind of humble, ordinary guy from Madeira. So that was quite a nice one as well.
That's it. And what would you say is the key to a good interview, do you think, with like a footballer or someone in that world?
A lot of it is luck, really. I mean, you have some questions and ideas and subject areas in your mind to discuss. I mean, there's several different kinds of interviews. There's quick ones after a game where you're only very limited and you can only really get in sort of four or five questions. And then there's more sort of considered where you sit down with somebody and you've planned it in some kind of detail. But quite often, the best ones are the ones that go wrong for whatever reason. You might ask a really stupid question, but the stupid questions sometimes elicit the best answers because, you know, for whatever reason, it spurs the person to be angry or to be, you know, to be contemptuous of the question, and therefore they give you a better answer. So, you know, I wouldn't knock daft questions. They have their place. Sometimes it's when the person is not really in the mood to talk and they're for whatever reason, they're a bit sort of off with you. Famously, I did an interview with Pep Guardiola after a match, which went sort of viral for a day because he was in a really bad mood, even though his team had won. Manchester City manager, he was at the time. And it was a real sort of uncomfortable interview, and I sort of just soldiered on, and we got to the end of it, and I thought, I'm not sure that was any good, but it kind of went viral because it was, an illustration of how difficult some footballers and football managers can be with interviewers. That was another memorable one, but for different reasons, I guess.
Yeah. Was that during his like first season?
Yeah.
I remember him being quite hostile with the media. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a few years ago when one or two people were doubting whether he could sort of cut it in the press, and a few things went wrong and the team wasn't gelling for whatever reason. And he was struggling, frankly. He was just coming to terms with it. But, I mean, how wrong were we to ever doubt him? Because it's all come right in bucket loads, hasn't it, ever since then? There's no doubt he struggled. And I think he learned from that. He learned from that period of adaptation to Premier League football, which is different from what he's used to in Spain and Germany. And he adapted brilliantly well. And, just look at the teams that he's produced ever since then.
What player comes to mind when you think of Boothby Park, do you think, or club figure?
Well, I mean, from my early days, probably Ken Wagstaff, who was, you know, a brilliant striker, should have played at the top level, really. And I think he had the chance to go to Derby County years ago. I think that's what history records. But he either turned it down or the deal couldn't be done. I'm not sure of the details. But, I mean, he was a real goal poacher, really, really talented footballer. And, of course, he had that fantastic partnership with Chris Chilton. Big man, small man, wasn't it? When they used to play 4-4-2 or a variation of that anyway. So he always sticks in the mind. And of course, you know, in later years, Dean Windass, who I've got to know a little bit, and just hold through and through, isn't he? Waggy was more of an adopted Olencian, wasn't he? He came from outside, but has sort of stayed and learned to love the place. Dean Windass grew up there, whole through and through. And, just gave us that indelible moment at Wembley that will live forever. What a hero. But there are loads of them. I mean, Ken Houghton was a big fan of his, and I got to play football when I was a kid with his son, Glyn, who was an excellent player as well. Still see Ken around occasionally. I can still kind of name that whole City team of McKechnie and Banks, De Vries, central defence, Terry Neal, Billy Wilkinson, Malcolm Lord, you know, the names just still spring off the tongue all these years later. It's weird, isn't it? And then through the years, Gareth Roberts was another great Hull City captain. We had some really good periods. Brian Horton was fantastic for City as well, wasn't he? Bill Brown, you know, the Steve Bruce years were great. I mean, a lot of people outside of Hull will knock Steve Bruce, but he still remains a hero, doesn't he, because of what he did. Terrific for us. Great, great recruiter of players and motivator of players. And it's just a shame how his career's suffered really for the experience at Newcastle, because you know, still, I think he's still loved in Hull, and rightly so.
Are there any City managers that you had to deal with regularly, kind of thing? Was Phil Brown one?
Yeah, I dealt with Phil Brown quite a lot. Yeah, real character. Great fun. You know, a bit of a Jack the Lad, I suppose. Not the obvious fit for Hull City, was it really? But the fans loved him. For his, you know, he was a man who liked to tan, wasn't he? Put it that way. He was great, wasn't he, for City? You know, I remember the time when he sat all the players down at Manchester City and gave them that sort of public dressing down, which, you know, he was kind of ridiculed for. But it kind of chimed with the fans, didn't it, a little bit. He was great. I mean, it's a shame that he's not still managing in the Football League. I think he's at Colton Dynamos now, isn't he, or somewhere like that.
I saw he's at Barrow, and then he's left Barrow, I think, maybe.
So he's bounced around the lower levels of the Football League and beyond since City. But and they were great years, weren't they? Singing on the pitch at the end of that game. When they stayed there. I mean, just brilliant. Well, he was a showman, wasn't he? He was a showman, and a football needs showman, as well as decent managers. And he was a decent manager for us.
No, definitely, yeah. And I remember him, like, not being afraid, like, rightly or wrongly, really, to take on the media after a game. He kind of...
I think all football managers speak their mind, really. The idea that they're all sort of towing the PR line is a myth. Some are more careful than others, but I mean, the fans want to hear the truth, don't they? And if the truth, you know, having a go at the interviewer, so be it. You know, we're big boys and girls, we can take it.
And then in terms of a high point of when you were going to Boothroyd Park, does one stick out?
Well, there's several games, really. I mean, I remember, and older Hull fans will remember this, playing Sheffield Wednesday when we're losing very late into the game, 4-1, and people started drifting away. I think it was a second division game then. And it was one of those games, with it being Sheffield Wednesday and being not that far away, they brought thousands of fans. So it was a full house that day. Be about 70, 71, I think. And somehow City came back and drew 4-all. It was one of the greatest comebacks in City history, I think. So that one stuck out. I remember, I think it was either Ken Wagstaff or Chris Chilton's testimonial match against Leeds. And Leeds brought their full, you know, the great team of Bremner and Hunter and Jack Charlton. I think that ended in a 5-all draw or something. I think it might have been a penalty shootout or something. That might have been the day when McKechnie played on the wing briefly, actually, that you mentioned before. That stuck in my mind. I remember getting lost. I went with my dad once when I was only very little. And me and him somehow got separated. I think we were playing Swindon at home. And I ended up walking home to Anlaby. And of course, my dad was excited. So, where's my little lad kind of thing? And I'd got home and he rang home. And my mum answered the phone, obviously. I said, oh, he's walked home. Which for a young man, it's probably several miles away, actually. It's probably about four or 5 miles, which is quite an effort. But it seemed like the sensible thing to do, to just leg it home. And that's what I did. I can't remember the result of the game, but I think it was Swindon at home. So, yeah, there's loads of games to count. I mean, it's been joy and mainly pain, hasn't it, following City, as you all know. I think you've done rather better than me because you've had some of the good years and less of the bad ones. But it's all part of being a football fan, isn't it? You take the rough with the smooth.
No, exactly. Like, it makes everything sweeter. But I kind of got my bad days out of the way early.
The first
10 years.
All part of the grounding, though. All part of the grounding.
No, definitely, yeah. And then, in terms of the best goal you saw at Boothroyd Park, does one spring to mind?
Yeah, I mean, again, going back, I remember John Hawley's goal for City against Sunderland. It would be sort of 74. I mean, sort of the hardcore fans will probably put me right on this, but it was in the 70s anyway. John Hawley was only an amateur. Which, I mean, it's unheard of now, isn't it? To turn out for a professional team when you're still an amateur, it just doesn't happen now. And he just arrowed this effort into the top corner from kind of wide on the left-hand side. It was just probably one of the best goals I've ever seen. You can still see it on YouTube. I think the game was televised by YTV or somebody. And what a goal that was. Still see John around, and he's... well into his 60s now. He's got an antiques business, hasn't he? Or an auctioneer's business. I see him occasionally when I'm at the ground. He sort of works the boxes and does a bit of the corporate hospitality stuff. But yeah, nice guy, and you know, he was a very good player for us in the 70s, certainly.
He went to Arsenal, didn't he? Which is mad.
He did, yeah. It's funny actually, because I talked to Arsenal fans of my kind of age, and they remember him as one of the worst players they ever had. And I don't think he really cut it with Arsenal, so he takes a fair bit of stick from them. But he got there, which is, you know, far more than most of the rest of us ever did. So he played at the top level, and he went to a few other Yorkshire clubs. I think at Leeds, wasn't he, and Bradford.
Yeah.
So he was pretty well travelled and had a decent career. I presume he went professional at the end, but then he went back to the family business, and that's what he still does, as far as I know. Yeah.
And then in terms of now, then, will he be able to get to the mini games this season, do you think?
I'm hoping so. Yeah. I mean, my work as I get on is sort of winding down a little bit, so I tend to go probably in the course of a season. I go to away games more than home ones because I don't live in Hull anymore. I think the last away game I went to? Probably Tranmere in the League Cup a couple of seasons ago with a friend of mine who lives over on the Wirral. But yeah, I mean, I've been all over to Wigan and what else have been away games in recent times? Certainly Wigan. I can't remember off the top of my head. But yeah, hopefully this season. I mean, there's a good feeling about City at the moment, isn't there, with the new management and the new owners. And you know, some what looks like some really exciting recruitment as well. I know George Honeyman's gone, so I think it's exciting times. I think the odds have sort of shortened on us getting promotion this season, which is maybe a good sign. Might add a little bit of pressure, which is not always good. But I'm looking forward to seeing them. A mate of mine rang me the other day and said he fancy going to the game at Preston quite early in the season, but unfortunately I'm away at the Commonwealth Games that weekend. But yeah, plans are afoot, so we will we'll see a few games certainly this season, no doubt about that.
How much football work do you do now then? Like, are you freelance now?
Yeah, I mean, most of my work in recent seasons has been for the Premier League, who have their own sort of broadcasting division, which the programmes I work on are all broadcast overseas. It's huge market for an interest in the Premier League. So we produce content, is the buzz phrase, isn't it? They're not programmes, it's content. Content for the overseas market, and I'd be at Liverpool or Manchester United, Everton, Burnley, not Burnley anymore, they're down, Leeds, who are still there by the skin of their teeth, interviewing players, covering matches, attending press conferences, that kind of thing, and as I say, all the content ends up on NBC in America or Super Sport in South Africa or Channel 7, Channel 9, whoever it is in Australia, all around the world really. It's a big draw for the Premier League, and obviously it's a very cosmopolitan league. Players from all over the world, and now fans from all over the world, and fortunately that keeps old boys like me in work for a bit.
yeah, just need City to get promoted, then you're sorted.
Well, that would be a joy. I mean, I first started working for the Premier League when City were still up there, and I was there, you know, virtually every week, interviewing the manager or the players or whatever. So that was great fun. It was like a labour of love, really. I mean, it's all a labour of love. Of course it is. It's football. But, I mean, if City could get back up, that'd be fantastic, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. One step at a time, I guess.
Yeah. Don't get ahead of ourselves. Yeah, pulling your old man in the stadium announcing stakes.
What's that again?
You didn't fancy following your old man in the stadium announcing.
No, I've not got his confidence, to be fair.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
A lot of that stuff is just front, really. I mean, you just if you fancy it, you just go out and just, you know, you just put it on, really, and just I mean, we were talking about this actually recently with Harry Grayson dying. Because Harry was actually a very shy man.
Right.
He is the personality you see on screen, and that is a version of him, but he's actually quite a quiet, retiring bloke. Just happens to be brilliant at, you know, presenting, and that's, you know, he could just get himself up to do it. I think a lot of it is about that, just performance, really. That seems to be the way it works.
Yeah, it's almost like playing a character kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not completely playing a character, because it is a version of you in some respects. But But it is a little bit like that, yeah.
Mm. So, you kind of know which marks to hit kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I learned a lot from Harry just watching him. He was a fantastic operator, brilliant operator. I could just switch it on, and he could move from kind of a football kind of audience to a political audience to a, you know, business audience or whatever, just seamlessly, just have that natural kind of thing about him that it's quite a talent and quite a thing to behold, really. So yeah, sad loss.
No, I have really fond memories of him, obviously, like associating him with City, like people like him and John Helm.
Yeah, Helm.
Like goals on Sunday and stuff.
Yeah, I think he turned 80, turns 80 next month. Funnily enough, we're talking about the Premier League. He makes most of his living for UEFA and FIFA, just travelling the world doing commentaries on really obscure games, you know, Argentina against Uruguay in the 19s and stuff like this. For various kind of streams and feeds and TV channels. I mean, literally, he's away half a year traveling the world. Still got the appetite for the game, and great, you know, great company. You know, fantastic sort of storyteller. And you want to try and get him on it, actually, because
I was thinking that
three part. He's a great raconteur, a great storyteller, and he'd have a few tales for you about trips to Boothroyd Park, I'm sure.
Who was the other guy? It was him and another guy on goals on Sunday.
John Shires from Callander.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah,
he's a Huddersfield Town fan.
Okay, right.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
He used to be massive, that.
I mean, Simon Clark. Do you remember Simon Clark from Look North?
Yeah. I think I've seen him on Facebook.
He's a big City fan. He might be worth having on. He'd have a few tales to tell. I was at Wembley for the promotion with him. We were both crying.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think everyone was, weren't they?
Yeah. Amazing day. We were actually sat in the press box that day, and do you know a football writer, old guy, must be about 90 now, Brian Glanville.
I heard the name, I think.
He was in front of us, and he was it Brian Glanville? Yeah, that was Brian Glanville. And we were in the press box, and of course you're meant to just be neutral in the press box, and we were getting far too rowdy and partisan, and he was really getting pissed off. Yeah, it's not the done thing to be too partisan in the press box. Well, partisan at all, to be honest.
Thanks for listening to this episode of This Was Boothroyd Park. As always, just like to give a quick shout out to those who made the research easy, including OnCloud7, TigerTube Player, Tiger Bass, and Rich Gardens The Decade.